Hey, everyone. Thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Brandis Friedman. Nick Blumberg has the evening off. The abrupt suspension of late-night talk show host Jimmy Kimmel has Governor J.B. Pritzker warning of an existential threat to our democracy.
What's at stake here is free speech. It's our Constitution and our way of life. We are fighting for our democracy now, and that is why people need to stand up and speak out.
President Donald Trump said Kimmel was fired because of a lack of talent and low ratings. But returning from a state visit to Britain, the president said TV networks that aired negative coverage of him could face consequences.
They're getting a license. I would think maybe their license should be taken away.
In Chicago, a special budget task force recommends property tax hikes and higher fees to close a billion-dollar budget deficit. Mayor Johnson says spending isn't the problem.
The working group fully established that we do not have a spending problem in Chicago. We have a revenue challenge in Chicago.
Border Patrol Chief Gregory Bovino announces a new federal crackdown on undocumented immigrants in Chicago. Women incarcerated at Logan Correctional Center allege widespread sexual abuse and retaliation. Former Illinois Governor Jim Edgar lies in state at the Capitol ahead of his funeral tomorrow. And in sports, the Chicago Cubs clinch their first playoff spot since 2020.
The Cubs an out away. In the air, left field. There's Hat. He's got it. Ball game. The Cubs are headed to the postseason.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Chris Jones from the Chicago Tribune's editorial board, Sarah Karp from WBEZ, Melody Mercado from Block Club Chicago, and from WTTW News, our very own Heather Sharon. Welcome back, everybody. So let's get right to it, because ICE has been in Chicago for a couple of weeks after a lot of talk. Melody, earlier today, ICE agents deployed tear gas on protesters at the Broadview ICE facility some miles west of Chicago. Mm-hmm. What do we know about what happened there?
We know that there have been continuous protests there that have gathered weekly, if not daily, to protest ICE coming in and out of the facility. There was widespread videos this morning that show just absolute chaos at the scene, where we have protesters lining up to prevent ICE officers from leaving. And frankly, the ICE officers don't care and kind of mow through the crowd and have deployed tear gas and other things to try to get protesters to move. I believe today they also took at least one protester into custody. And I know that we had a crew down there along with other Chicago outlets as well. And just something consistently that I've been hearing, it's just chaotic.
Yeah, and we're looking at a little bit of video of that now taken from social media from Evanston mayor and congressional candidate Daniel Biss, as well as congressional candidate Kat Abugazela. They are running for the same seat, it should be noticed. It should be noted. DHS saying in a press release this afternoon that they arrested three people by federal law enforcement. Sarah, what are we hearing from local elected officials? What do we know about how they're responding to this?
Well, most local elected officials are very much against what's going on with ICE. Many instances this week where ICE has arrested people. Arrested earlier this week in Elgin, they arrested two U.S. citizens while they were, you know, conducting a raid. And every day after these actions, we are hearing from multiple elected officials that this is not what we want to be happening in our city. And, you know, the Sun-Times, which is our sister publication, has reported that a lot of the people that are being arrested are not, you know, are not like these hardened criminals, are not the worst of the worst. Some of them aren't, that they reported that they arrested in Chicago, aren't even from Chicago and weren't even arrested in Chicago. So it's really, we're really trying to get a handle on what is exactly happening here.
Heather, DHS's Operation Midway Blitz, it's been going on for a couple of weeks now, and we know that CPB Chief Gregory Bovino, he's announcing Operation At Large. But what do we know about, like, the tactics and some of the results that have been coming out of these two operations.
Yeah. Well, today the AP reported that ICE had told them that a total of 400 people had been detained as part of Operation Midway Blitz. It's not clear sort of what Operation At Large has done or will do. What's interesting is that most of those arrests, as we understand it, were what's known as collateral arrests, where they will go out and they will target somebody who has an order of removal or a criminal conviction, and they will essentially detain everyone in the radius and sort of seek to deport those people who are not here with legal status. So that is where the bulk of those arrests are coming from, and why very few of the people that we can ascertain that have been detained by ICE have significant criminal records. And I think that is what is causing so much fear and concern because, you know, if you're a green card holder, if you're here on a visa and you're sort of swept up into one of these actions, it's unclear sort of whether you will be allowed to go about your business.
And to that point, Chris, you know, aside from undocumented immigrants, ICE has detained this week one U.S. citizen that we know of in some of these immigration sweeps. And that was included just this week in Elgin. Are there concerns that ICE might be overreaching its authority here?
Well, ICE simply cannot arrest U.S. citizens, nor can it arrest, nor should it arrest green card holders or lawful permanent residents, as they're called. And if they're in doubt on somebody's citizen status, then they have to move on and go find somebody else who's not a citizen. They cannot be doing that. I mean, it's just a job competence issue, as far as I'm concerned, that no U.S. citizen should have to deal with having to show ID to an immigration agent. It's kind of preposterous that we're even talking about it to me. Now, I suppose you could argue that, okay, they've got to ask people to show ID, but you don't really. They should not be interacting with U.S. citizens, period.
And what do you make of ICE's tactics altogether?
Well, I don't think any Americans support these kinds of tactics. People don't support military vehicles. People don't en masse support masks, certainly not people in this region. They don't support the kind of aggressive clothing that some of the agents are wearing. They don't support any of that. What there is support for is the removal of unlawful immigrants who have criminal records, and there's a majority of Americans who support that. Governor of Illinois has said he supports that. That's what people support. The rest of it, people don't support. It's not that different from previous presidents in terms of immigration enforcement. We had Larry Snelling in at the editorial board on Friday. He said that. He said it's not, the numbers are not that different to what's been gone on for many, many years. But what's different is the tactics, and it's a sort of brutalization. It's creating a climate of fear, and it's counterproductive, and I would say, in case of U.S. citizens and green card holders, unacceptable.
Yeah, and in Elgin, you know, they sent a, at least from what people were telling us, they sent like a hand grenade in, you know, to scare people. There are helicopters above. I mean, there are children who are waking up to this type of, you know, this type of siege, and it, you know. Yeah, it's sort of unbelievable that this is happening. And also, they arrested a student in the parking lot of Elgin Community College this week, and I don't know of any other situation where ICE has gone onto a college campus and arrested somebody. I mean, we're looking to see if there's other instances, but that's, you know, that's sort of unheard of.
And for its part, DHS sent out two releases this afternoon, one criticizing Governor J.B. Pritzker about some of the language that he has been using and defending the officer who shot and killed an immigrant that they were attempting to detain last week after that person allegedly drove their car at officers, ended up driving that officer for a significant distance is the term they use. They haven't given an actual term of measurement. Meanwhile, though, Melody, how would you say community members are responding? Some are, you know, sort of responding with these rapid response teams so that they can alert people in the community. What are we seeing and hearing from community folks?
Yeah, I've seen rapid response members that consistently are riding around on bikes or scooters in their neighborhoods to go live or send photos and videos to community members to alert them if ICE is in their neighborhood. Law Club Chicago did a story about community members also passing out whistles in various neighborhoods to at least sound some sort of alarm. We've seen videos of people physically blocking what they believe to be ICE vehicles with their own cars, standing in front of them. And in some of these videos, we see that some of these tactics are successful. We've seen ICE officers drive away or, you know, don't return back to the area. But I would say that community groups have really stepped up in this, you know, in this moment and have really been shouldering, you know, sort of the alert system for their neighbors who can't necessarily, might not have a smartphone, might not be watching the news, and might be scared to, you know, leave their home.
Heather, what do you make of what the governor has been saying, and what do you think we can expect from him and Mayor Johnson, for that matter, going forward?
Well, their ability to sort of stop or limit what's been happening right now is really non-existent because, as Chris said, these are federal agents executing federal law. And I think the big issue is that we sort of, there was like a national sense that the president sort of had decided to not send military troops to Chicago and that somehow their resistance had like convinced the president to sort of look to Memphis or other cities. I think that, you know, we've talked a lot about what the non-National Guard sort of, you know, state of affairs is in Chicago. And we heard from the president again today in the Oval Office that he intends to send National Guard troops to Chicago. I think violent, chaotic confrontations like the ones that we saw outside Broadview make that more likely and raise the risk of that. And I think it's just important to know that if the president does deploy National Guard troops, what we are seeing now on the streets of Chicago is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of fear and potential chaos. Also, but that if that happens, the governor has said he will go to federal court. He will ask a judge to stop the deployment. But until then, there's not much more the governor can do than asking people to record, asking people to give to mutual aid, and asking people, as he has said numerous times, to be loud for America.
Okay, so let's move on a little bit, because the other big piece of news that everybody is talking about this week, of course, is the Jimmy Kimmel suspension. Chris, we just heard earlier in the show from Governor Pritzker warning of a fundamental threat to our way of life. President Trump talking about taking broadcast licenses away from TV stations and networks that have negative coverage of him. What is your take on what Jimmy Kimmel said and what the reaction has been?
Well, I'm fired up on this because I think everyone's lost their minds on this whole story. And I think it's an example of two things being true at once. I think we can say unequivocally that there was no role for the federal government in anything Jimmy Kimmel said on Jimmy Kimmel Live. The FCC should not have got involved. He didn't say anything that should have been of any kind of interest to them. They should not have pressured the networks. They did pressure ABC, Disney ABC. Disney ABC should have resisted that pressure. Now, having said that, I didn't like that bit that he did. I thought it was not particularly funny. I think a lot of people haven't watched the whole bit. If you include the video at the end, I thought it was somewhat cruel. I think it didn't reflect the fact that this was somebody who was shot and who has small children. And I don't think in a year's time, a lot of the people who are sort of manning the barricades for Jimmy Kimmel will look back on that bit and go, that was a great piece of comedy. That's just my view. I watched it. I was like, that's, you know, the networks are entitled to say to him, his bosses, just like we all have bosses, they can always say, you know, we don't like that. You could not invite me back next week because of something I said tonight. So there is the business side of it, and that's a legitimate side. And I think also that, you know, free speech, suddenly now the left has discovered free speech and the right is sort of arguing the other way. And I literally got an op-ed from somebody who argued the exact opposite when it was speech that they liked. But so unequivocally, no role for the government should not be censored. Networks should not be pressured. But that wasn't Jimmy Kimmel's finest moment.
That said, Governor Pritzker making calls for viewers to boycott and protest Nextstar and Sinclair, including some local stations here.
Ridiculous. Mm-hmm.
I was really interested to see how quickly Governor Pritzker responded to this whole conflagration. He was out with a statement on social media within minutes of the announcement by ABC News, that Jimmy Kimmel was going to be suspended. And he was on MSNBC that night sort of giving those remarks that we saw a little bit of, you know, we all expect Governor Pritzker, who is running for a third term as governor, to also run for president in 2028. And it's clear that in his political calculus, he sees this as as a winning issue, or at least he feels an obligation to sort of sound the alarm about this, as he has been sounding the alarm about the potential of military personnel on Chicago's streets. But my job is to sort of see everything through a political lens, for better or for worse. And when a politician moves that quickly on a developing story, that's when my spidey sense always goes up a little
bit. That's why you have those spidey senses, Heather.
You know, the people who work in Chicago at WGN-TV had nothing to do with that decision.
Right.
Boycotting WGN and the governor telling people to do that is an overreaction. Ridiculous. He shouldn't be doing it.
Melody?
Well, I was going to say, I think, you know, one of the biggest things to highlight here is that Nexstar wants to merge with Tegna, which, if people are not familiar, Nexstar carries a bunch of local stations. Tegna has about 60 to 70 other stations they want to add to that. Of course, they need the appeal of the president of the FCC. They need the appeal of President Trump to move this forward. And so I think there is a concern on, you know, those people in power influencing businesses to make decisions that benefit them, which everybody, I think, should be concerned about.
Okay, so the Chicago Budget Task Force this week recommended that the city hike property taxes annually to be able to keep pace with inflation to help close that little budget deficit of about $1 billion. The task force warned that if decisive budget action, Heather, is not taken, that the consequences for city services would be profound. Nobody likes a good tax hike, especially no politicians, but sometimes you have to eat your vegetables. Not that I'm suggesting eating vegetables at all. But how is the mayor responding to what the task force is recommending?
Well, he is sort of taking what he likes and leaving what he doesn't like. He has said he will not propose a property tax hike of any amount, whether tied to inflation or not, to close this budget gap. But he's glad that the task force essentially agrees with his take of the larger issue, that the issue is not that Chicago is overspending or that there's a lot of waste, fraud, or abuse, but that essentially Chicago's revenue has not kept pace with its expenses. Sort of like, you know, you're somebody who has a job, but you know, your mortgage has gone up or your rent has gone up and your income is just not keeping up with those costs. Now, the question is, well, how do you bridge that gap? And Chicago's budget has been out of whack to some degree or another for decades. So the question is, how do you fix it? The big issue is that the property tax is really the only major lever the city can pull to sort of raise significant amounts of revenue. The other task force recommendations were, frankly, penny ante. Let's put advertising on light poles. Let's let's tax ambulance rides more significantly. Let's increase the liquor tax. That is not going to find $1 billion within the next, by the end of the year. It just isn't. So the big question is what is the city going to do? Well, if it wants to raise other taxes, it needs help from Springfield. And just like you said, there are very few elected officials who are eager to vote for any kind of property tax increase.
$1 billion in the couch cushions. Chris?
Well, if you have a panel and you say, I want revenue ideas and cutting ideas, and you then come out and say, we don't have a spending problem, we have a revenue problem, you're essentially saying to the panel, I'm not going to listen to half of your ideas, right? I mean, that's what he said. So that would suggest that those things are dead in the water anyway. I think Chicago does have a spending problem, and I think one of the problems is that the city government is much larger than it's been, and I don't think most Chicagoans would say it delivers more services or does anything better. So the reality is that the city government has to shrink. It's just a very painful process, and if it doesn't, I think that it's, you know, we're potentially going down a road to insolvency. And at that point, when the city can't pay its bills, then it gets really unpleasant and you have a sort of disorderly situation where people really start to suffer. The other part of this, as Heather knows, is, you know, J.B. Pritzker added this pension sweetener for the police and firefighters that added, according to the city, what was it, $11 billion in unfunded liabilities. So again, as Heather says, these things like light poles and garbage fees, that was $11 billion that the city has no ability, you know, as an unfunded liability. So I think a lot of smart people are sort of saying, look, this is really a situation we're not going to solve with garbage fees. There has to be a concentrated, possibly definitely multi-year effort to make government more efficient and to get us out of this hole.
Sarah?
Well, I was just wondering because, I mean, I didn't read the task force report.
Oh,
I was
it's
doing
a barn
some
burner.
Other things. But I'm wondering, what are the expenses that they say that should be cut? I'm just
curious
about
that. Well, they did not make a lot of suggestions
furlough
about
days,
yeah,
a couple of furlough
yeah. days and, you know, an increase in the garbage fee, which is significantly subsidized right now by the city. But the issue is that of the city's discretionary fund, so that's money that the city council gets to decide how to spend, fully half of that goes to the Chicago Police Department. And if you ask most people who want to shrink the size of government and you say, well, great, half of that's got to come from the police department, they will accuse you of wanting to put people's lives at risk, which makes it really hard to have sort of a fact-based discussion about how to shrink city government. Because if you believe that, you are arguing that the Chicago Police Department should shrink. And that is a non-starter for many people.
Well, and Heather, you did some reporting this week on the costs that CPD spends. Folks are going to have to go to the website because we have to keep it moving. But it's specifically about how, again, drastically over their overtime budget for the seventh straight year. But I want to get Sarah back in on education because you've done some reporting on special ed cuts at CPS this week. Pretty illuminating. What did you find?
Well, essentially, what I found is that in the spring, when they hand out budgets to principals for the coming school year, they cut about 1,000 special education positions. That's, you know, a good chunk of special education classroom aides and also teachers. Then school started, and they looked at the kids and looked at the minutes that they need to have services and decided they needed to add back 600 positions. Now, they say this was their plan all along, and this is because they're trying to right-size the system, and they wanted to make sure the kids were in the schools so that they could, you know, send the teachers and the aides to where the kids are. And it goes back to this whole, it's very hard in a school district that's so big like Chicago Public Schools, where kids are mobile, you know, and trying to make sure that the resources are where the kids are is a difficult, very delicate task. But there are a lot of people saying, adding back 600 jobs once the school year has started is a very difficult thing because
it's hard to fill those
hard to fill those positions. I mean, there's not like a bunch of teachers just sitting around
waiting to be called at the beginning of the school year. They're usually hoping to get that phone call over the summer before the previous school year ended.
Right. You get a job. The other thing, though, that's very interesting is that enrollment data that hasn't officially come out, but that's sort of roughly public, shows that the number of kids who are getting special education services has grown exponentially. I mean, we're talking about 54,500 kids that are getting special education services, plus another 20,000 that get some sort of extra support. And so I think this speaks to the fact that there's a lot of need, and this is a school system that does not have a lot of money. And so there's a lot of hard decisions that people are trying to figure out.
Melody, what do you imagine some of this means for the students and their families?
Well, it means, as Sarah highlighted in her story, there are children coming home that are, you know, not achieving what they should be able to, like, education-wise in the classroom, because they're simply not getting what is legally, you know, obligated that the school district should be giving them, whether that's one-on-one time or, you know, some sort of assistance to better understand the curriculum and help them with their specified needs. And I think that's very disappointing for a parent to hear your child come home from school and say, I'm trying my best, I just am not understanding it.
Okay, so before we run out of time, Chris, in addition to being among several recent governors who did not go to prison, Governor Jim Edgar died this week at the age of 79. How do you think he'll be remembered? What's his legacy as governor of Illinois?
I think his legacy is one of cooperation, of reaching across the aisle, and of somebody with the ability to balance a budget, kind of a lost skill in Illinois, and somebody who really cared about the state, and also somebody who, interestingly enough, didn't run for an additional third term, even though he could have been elected, which these days is kind of a wild thing, and he sort of said no. And not, by the way, not only did he not run for an additional term, he didn't. A lot of people wanted him to run for higher office than governor. He turned it all down, saying that he wanted to spend time with his family and that he felt like he was done. And then he put that attention back into creating this great fellows program and really giving back to the state of Illinois. And I think there are some sort of aging Republicans out there who look back on Edgar and they go, wow, those were the days. And now, of course, the party barely exists in Illinois. And certainly the people like Governor Edgar are not in power anymore. And I think for a lot of people, that was a wistful moment, the passing of a really great Illinoisan.
All right. I don't want the Cubs fans to come for me. So let's talk about this postseason that they've gotten into for the first time since 2020. What are your expectations? 20 seconds.
Well, I live right by the ballpark. I just want two games. So I want them to get home field. You know, if they have the best record, they're going to get home field advantage, and then I get to maybe go twice if I can get a ticket. So, but I think it's great for Chicago. We're ready for something like this. It's been a few years. Come on, let's all go Cubbies.
Go Cubs, go. All right. Fingers crossed for the Cubs. All right. We are out of time, though. My thanks to Chris Jones and Sarah Karp, as well as Melody Mercado and Heather Sharone. And we're back to wrap things up right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Week in Review is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, and Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown. Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night. Be sure to sign up for our free email newsletter, The Daily Chicagoan, and our newest newsletter, Urban Nature with Patty Whetley, both at WTTW.com/newsletter. And while you're there, be sure to check out our website for the very latest from WTTW News. Now, for the Week in Review, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, safe, and informed. Have a great weekend. Okay, so the other thing that's happening this weekend is the Chicago River Swim for the first time since 1927.
Ew. Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's pretty
I'm
much
us. Well, I would do it, but I'm going to wait for a few rounds of other people.
Right.
Well,
make sure you get a couple of years from now.
Another, okay. Yeah. Then
well, they're going to have, so we had them on the show last night, and they're going to have multiple heats, right? Okay. And so would you want to be, like, in one of the later heats just to see
No,
if,
I want to be, like, 3 months from now.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Next year.
Maybe, like, next year's swim, perhaps.
Yeah.
Well, Friends of the River, we had Marjorie, I don't want to say her name wrong right now, but we had her on the show as well, and I think she talked about
Frisbee,
thank you, Margaret Frisbee, talking a lot about, you know, how the river is actually much healthier than people think. It's still got the bad rap from the days when it was not.
Sure.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm that gives back to the community through law and philanthropy.